When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the High Vibration Living Podcast. I'm your host, Chef Whitney Aronoff, founder of Starseed Kitchen and High Vibration Foods. Join me for conversation where we learn about food, wellness, beauty, travel, and spiritual concepts for high vibration living. Only you know what your body needs. Let this be the reminder that you have the power to tap in and know the food, self-care, and spiritual practices that will best serve you. I will be sharing my knowledge and learning with you from experts providing insight into nourishing all the layers of you, the physical, emotional, spiritual, and etheric bodies, so you can feel your best and live your dreams. Let's get started. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the High Vibration Living Podcast. I'm your host, Chef Whitney Aronoff, founder of Starseed Kitchen and High Vibration Foods. Today is such a treat for me because I have Bailey Van Tassel on the podcast. She is a friend of mine. She's an incredible gardener that you probably are following on Instagram. And I just deeply enjoy my conversations with her because she really understands the connection between land, food, gardening, vibration. I can go deep with her on really any subject. If you aren't familiar with Bailey, Bailey Van Tassel is a self-taught gardener and writer, creating gardening content for brands and helping the everyday person create vegetable or kitchen gardens of their own. She is the host of the Garden Culture podcast and runs the Kitchen Garden Society, a monthly garden club membership, helping you get the garden of your dreams and maximizing your harvest. In the show notes, I have a link to her podcast and her website where you can learn more about her. We talk about what a kitchen garden is and the history of kitchen gardens in society, how to approach getting started. Because for a lot of people, growing your own food is a little intimidating. So how to get started, what to choose, what to have big dreams about, and the benefits of gardening for your health and the benefits of eating food from your garden. And then we go off on a few other tangents just about food, beauty, cooking, gardening, and more. This was a really fun episode for me. I hope you guys enjoy it as well. And without further ado, here is Bailey Van Tassel. Cheers. Hi, Bailey. Welcome to the High Vibration Living Podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I am absolutely honored to be here.
Well, it's such a treat to interview like the resident gardener who actually knows how to lay out a garden for cooking and for using the ingredients in your kitchen. And I really love that. You're a great teacher when it comes to how to transition your life to growing your own foods and make it manageable.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. It caught me by surprise and it's so fun. It's so fun for me. So I'm excited. Like I'm an evangelist at this point where I feel like I'm like a missionary for gardening.
Well, you use a term that I find fascinating called a kitchen garden. What in your definition is a kitchen garden?
So a kitchen garden, so to speak, dates back to actually like 16th, 17th century France. And in French, it's called a potager. But essentially, these French market gardeners got together and they were using small spaces to grow a ton of vegetables to take them to market to sell. And this was back when you also needed to grow food for yourself and to create any sort of freedom outside of like the monarchy situation. You needed to learn how to grow food. So people would have these beautiful gardens right outside of their kitchen to grow food and then also some ornamentals and flowers, like edible flowers. So the term kitchen garden, to me, it just helps people understand that it's like a beautiful vegetable garden that I'm using for like cooking and living. It's not like a garden where you're just going to go through and like look at the roses or a garden where it's, you know, just zucchini, I guess. But I could just call it a vegetable garden. but I feel like a kitchen garden is a little more specific in a sense where it's like an extension of the home, like used for the home.
It sounds right for me too. I really like it because I feel like if you coin that term for your garden, then you're more likely to actually get out there and use it.
For sure. And the fact that it's, I mean, they're by design supposed to be right outside the kitchen door, makes it more convenient. And there are a bunch of garden design and even like permaculture principles that dictate basically how frequently you use the plant is how close you also plant it in the kitchen garden. So proximity actually has a lot to do with how much we're going to use what we grow and also tend to what we're growing.
So what should we plant in our ideal situation closest to our kitchen windows, and what should we plant further out? In our dream scenario, we all have our dream homes. We all have our dream yards. Let's just big picture it.
Yes. So the closest thing you want to have to the door or to the window, like at a fingertip, are your herbs, girl. You know this.
But I wanted you to say it.
Herbs and spices are what you're going to use the most multiple times a day. It's like also usually the finishing touch where you're putting something together and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I need a sprig of thyme like for my chili, or I need to go grab some bay leaves to throw into this stew. It's usually that thing where I'm like running out, you know, at 6:30 barefoot and there's something about to burn that I have to go grab is an herb. So the first row sort of zone of genius is going to start with your herbs. And then from there, you're going to do like your leafy greens. Everyone's grabbing salad greens throughout the day. I feel like you're throwing some arugula in with your eggs. You've got a spinach salad going for lunch, and then you've got something you're working on for dinner. So leafy greens, and then also like seasonally appropriate vegetables that are going to be like a short season. So for example, I would even consider a tomato a short season, cucumber. Mm-hmm. You're really having them in the kitchen super active for maybe 90 days. And so when those are in season, you want those to be the next layer where you're using those to be sort of the hero of your dish. Like you're basing everything around the flavor profile of the tomato or how that's really going to like set things off. Then a layer behind that, distance-wise, are going to be some of your staple crops. So I would say like your potatoes, your onions, they're in the ground longer. They're taking up more space. You don't need to be out there with them as much. And you're also usually harvesting them and bringing them inside for storage as opposed to grabbing them right before you cook with them. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, and now we're going to even get into like layering in terms of going vertical and things, are going to be things like your fruit and nuts and like trees, things that are vining that need more structure and more space. So that's sort of the evolution of how you decide on proximity when it comes to what you're growing and where you're placing it.
How do you physically feel now that you get to walk outside and pick something before a meal versus when you were cooking at home and all your produce was from a grocery store? Do you physically feel different?
Yeah, I mean, from a health perspective, I would say I've always been like a farmer's market, organic produce gal, because I grew up in an area where from a really young age that was valued. However, I will say, and this is so perfect, you speak this language, vibrationally, the food sits lighter in my system. And mm-hmm. The taste is obviously better. They talk about the flavor gap in between homegrown veggies versus store-bought. Farmer's market's a great place to get delicious veggies too, but you also still kind of want to know your farmer and where they're coming mm-hmm. from and what their practices are. But it's just the food is more resonant. Like it sits lighter. It's been like the specific, let's say tomato you're pulling off the plant is actually best suited as well for you because you're living where that specific fruit was able to come alive. And that like all seeds are not always going to germinate unless they're right for the conditions. So I tell people to save their seeds as well because they're becoming adapted for your location, your microclimate, your soil, your garden. So the more and more it all like compounds that you're growing your food from your seeds and saving it forward and forward, it's like designed for you. And then I feel like my body starts to crave flavors I never before would have ever even considered, for example, like celery root or fennel, like more exotic flavors where it's now I'm like wanting to do these like celery root sort of like, I don't want to call it a salad, but almost like, you know, it's a little bit like a.
I have a celery root salad with black lentils and hazelnuts. That's unbelievable. And it's hard for me to get my personal chef clients to want to have it because it just sounds a little odd to them, but it is the most decadent, savory, delicious, rich dish.
It is. Well, and I don't know, I it's new to me as well, but and I had an Ina Garten recipe where I think there's even like a little bit of mayonnaise in there, which just makes things, it's creamy, it's crunchy. It's savory, like it almost has like an umami and you're like, this is celery root? Like what's going on here? But it's so beautiful because I feel like when you're able to grow your own food, your body chemistry changes in a sense where you're craving better food. And it's, yeah, I mean, that's always going to make you feel better. But for me, it is something where it's like I can taste the lightness and the energy in the food, and it's just a totally different experience.
The other question I have is because you're getting to constantly walk outside barefoot if you choose to, or you're constantly touching plants, you have that physical interaction. Do you essentially feel more grounded, like calmer, smoother, not as overwhelmed because you are getting to spend a little extra time in nature every day than most of us? Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And mainly I notice when that's taken away. So whenever I'm in dysregulation or anxiety or overwhelm, I have trained myself to go outside and seek nature, mainly because I use the garden as that escape. So I'll find myself if I start feeling like I'm not grounded, I'm craving, like I need to go outside. I need to go walk through the garden and then it'll draw me in. Next thing you know, like 30 minutes later, I've been like pruning something, seeding something. Like it's just kind of called me in and just wiped all of that away. But I feel like, and this was by design, the reason I felt so called to start gardening in the first place is I wanted to bake something into my life that would take up space in the, like in a good way. I was like, yeah. I want something that's going to actually be the right kind of priority that I have to focus on or else it will fail. And I wanted that for my children. I wanted that for us where we live in Southern California, like every single comfort and every single convenience is at our fingertips, but that does not build good character. That does not build a joyful and fulfilled life. So I was like, I want, you know, I just felt very like, we need this to keep us grounded and so that the other things that aren't as important don't even have room to creep in. I don't even have time to think about it, you know?
Well, it's amazing you chose a hobby that constantly gives back to you. So if we all take a look at our hobbies and all the different hobbies that are out there that we could start, they cost money. Most of them, you know, require that we put a little investment, whether it's tools, machines, travel, whatever it is. And you chose a hobby that gives you a return on your investment. It actually feeds you physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a lot at play that's beyond me, but I'll say I had great examples of it when I was young too. And that's something I found with like dozens, if not hundreds of people that I interviewed at this point is there's always someone in their past that's left this imprint, like this thumbprint, this green thumbprint, so to speak. That's really showcased how good it is for your soul. So that was sort of baked in, which was really fun. But yeah, I mean, having and it is funny because with vegetable gardening, at first I was like very hardcore. I'm like, if it's not edible, there's no ROI and I don't even want to do it. It wasn't interesting to me. And now I'm dabbling more in things that have a much longer growth time, like fruit, like, you know, planting fruit trees or berry canes where they're not even going to actually bear fruit. You're not going to see the return on your investment for years, but then the legacy forward is lasts far beyond you. And that like multi-generational impact, like the interest you're making on that, I feel like is so incredible and really, really drives me as my own kitchen garden journey evolves into something bigger. Now it's like, God, I just want to like decorate the world with kitchen gardens and permaculture landscapes and all of this, you know?
And I think a lot of people want that. They are so overwhelmed with starting themselves. They want someone to hold their hand through getting started. Did you hire someone to help you get started, or did you just buy a bunch of books, do your research online, and go for it?
Yeah, I mean, it was so beautiful because I had not even realized how much I had sort of lost so much of myself when I started gardening. And it was really, I really got to tap back into my intuition and a deeper sense of self-confidence. I'm a confident gal. I didn't think I was missing that until I started the garden. And then it really gave me a boost into feeling just more of who I am. I had no training. I did not hire anyone. I actually didn't even read very many books. I mostly just went out there and was like, let's play. Like, I want to do this for fun, like for my heart. I feel called to it. This is my space. It's not my husband's. It's no one else's. Like, and I just let that lead. And I was so, because when you come at it from that perspective too, again, which wasn't even really by design, it is very much my personality. I'm a little bit of more of a type B than a type A. So I'm kind of like, let's just like throw caution to the wind. Like, let's be crazy. And so I got to do that again, and it was so lovely. And then I started basically forming better questions so that I could feed my knowledge in a more pointed way, which is something that I was grateful I got to experience, because essentially experts are just people that know how to ask the right questions, right? And they know how to get the right answers. So just a few levels beyond you on that. And so there was one book I found before I gardened, but didn't read until after I got started, which was interesting, called The Postage Stamp Garden by Duane Newcomb. And it was from like the 70s. And this little book, it was like poking out of this thrift store shelf. I was thrifting with my dad, who has since passed. It was like a really beautiful trip with him. And he knew I wanted to garden. He learned to garden from this Swiss man. It's this like amazing story. Anyways, I grabbed that book, never read it, sat on my shelf. Then I started gardening in my first season, and I'm like, I think I have a gardening book I should poke through. Read that cover to cover, and to this day, it's one of my favorite books I've read because it really leans into the approach that I take when it comes to the purpose of my gardening and how I do it. So a lot of biodiversity, all organic. I'm gardening for max yield, so I squish everything together more than a conventional gardener would tell you to do. And so that's kind of how I went at it. And then once I started becoming just in love with gardening, read one book, that's when I started leaning in and getting really into, because then I started figuring out like, why are my peppers so small? Oh, companion planting. It's probably getting nutrients stolen from the tomato it's next to. Then I'm like digging into companion planting, and then I'm finding books. And then I was like next level, getting my PhD in kitchen gardening on my own, just couldn't, and still I cannot consume enough information about it. Like, I listen to these British gardening podcasts, and I'm reading obscure books like that you can only find in bookstores, because anything before the internet just has better information. And anyways,
there's nothing like those British gardens. I could do a whole tour of England in the spring just to see their gardens. It's absolutely incredible. And I really admire those skills to be able to layer, whether they're layering vegetables and fruits, but it's the layer of plants. I find it fascinating. And, you know, it takes a lot of deep knowledge and patience to do that.
For sure. It's so wild. I do that within my beds because I like my garden to be pretty. Like, I like it to look interesting and dynamic. And I get flack for that sometimes online, where people are like, you don't need rate. Like, you can just garden in the ground like our Meemaws did. And I'm like, yes, of course you can. But like, it's so lovely to have the garden really beckon you in and have these layers and these dynamics, so that visually there's a visual component to nature that is just as healing as being in it. I mean, just looking out your window at a green space is known to reduce anxiety and depression. So we can't discount the beauty component. That's a part of it. But yeah, the layering, and then it's like knowing how to grow the plants, anticipating the way they're going to look when they're mature, so that you're getting the impact when someone walks in at you know, through the life cycle of the garden, is a whole nother side of it. To your point, I also admire those insanely like gorgeous British gardens. It's this knowledge too that's passed down, and you learn it. I don't know. It's just all of it. It's endless in such a beautiful way.
Yeah. It's just really impressive that you've delved and dived into this and have you've done a great job of teaching along the way. And that's what I really admire about you is you do such a great job of teaching. You make it approachable and you make it seem like something that any of us can start because it does seem intimidating, which is so odd because it's just soil. It's just plants, you know? But I think for most of us in this day and age, getting dirty is a little intimidating and overwhelming.
For sure. I think that people, and I do get it too, it does require a little bit of setup, right? A little bit of investment and kind of feeling like, where do I start? How much time do I have to dedicate to this? You know, getting it set up and going. And that is often one of my top questions, like where do I begin, you know? So I always do want to be teaching and really just inspiring people to feel like FOMO, like I'm missing out if I'm not gardening and growing my own food, because I think you are. But I do see how it can be overwhelming feeling like you need the right amount of space and sun and water. And it's just one of those things I feel like once you're like, I'm ready, let's just go. I'm going to mess up. I mean, my first garden, the first time I grew vegetables was in like an 18-inch pot. I didn't even have my raised beds. And then once I became obsessed with that, which was its own little saga, things like started really rolling.
Well, if someone was going to get started with their first raised bed, or maybe they can do two raised beds, should they just approach with basic vegetables or do they need to really look up what's best for their region and go from there?
The reason you do want to use an approach that's really local is we all live in a hardiness zone. So the United States is broken into about 11 hardiness zones. We actually really only have like 9, but it doesn't matter. So we're in Southern California in zone 10. And the reason that's important is certain varieties of vegetable grow better in certain areas, but that also helps you dictate the timing of when to start them. We are unique in Southern California because we don't really have a frost. So our seasons are kind of flipped sometimes and we can start things at different times than like the average gardener. But the most of the country is like putting plants in the ground as soon as the danger of frost has passed, and then growing things right up until frost is looming and coming forward. And those frost dates are going to dictate when you start your seeds, when the ground is workable, so that you know like how to time everything. So with your first two raised beds, you really just want to keep in mind, when can I start planting and what will do well? I mean, most regions of the U.S. are going to be able to grow the basics, like the tomatoes and the cucumbers and the squash, and it all is just a matter of beans, you know, peas, of when you plant it. We are like kind of going near subtropical, so we have the ability to grow like citrus, avocado, papaya. Like, we can grow the crazy things, but there are some things we can't grow. Some things require chill hours, or they just have a really hard time with our climate. So like rhubarb's kind of hard for us. We can't a lot of stone fruit or apples. We have to get very specific with that. So there are just your hardiness zone is your boundary, and that's what's going to help you determine really when to grow which things.
So as a chef, I've always wanted to grow the items that I can't get at a grocery store, that I can only find at really good farmers markets. And I have found that I even struggle to find them at farmers markets here. So I basically want like a mini San Juan Capistrano ecology center in my backyard, the really unique squashes, burdock root, all the variety of radishes. You know, I hear there's even pink sweet potatoes. I want the pink sweet potatoes.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's a variety of color of purple sweet potatoes, not just the dark purple ones that we see, but the lavender ones with the yellow, with the more cream flesh that you can get in Maui. You know, like it's those really unique items.
Yeah.
Is it possible to approach, you know, one or two beds and do those more obscure vegetables instead of the usual greens, zucchinis, et cetera?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say with each year, I probably grow more and more unique and exotic vegetables to replace the more common things because for one, they're really exciting to grow and like kind of because you can. You're like, oh, I'm going to grow purple snap peas instead because obviously why would I not? Sometimes the weird veggies, especially with tomatoes, you want to be careful. They're not as flavorful as you'd expect. So you kind of, you get to know it. The sweet potatoes though, those are incredible. And so yes, definitely. I mean, there are dozens of seed companies that you can buy these unique seeds from and cultivate them and get them going in your garden. I highly recommend it. From a nutritional perspective, it's better for you. Like, we actually want to be nourishing ourselves, right, with different, these different colors, because the colors are going to indicate nutrients like lycopene and like all of these things that, like, when you go to the grocery store, you're seeing like a lot of chlorophyll, right? You're like seeing lots of green, and like, that's good. But we also, we do want to eat the rainbow, like we've all heard. And I feel like even it gives us access to different micronutrients and just different things that were normally not available for our bodies. But it also just keeps the experience of gardening so interesting and so fun, because you're really anticipating and you're going to baby those plants a little more. So you're going to go out there more. And I always think that's really good. I always recommend that there's something that you're growing that's just interesting and exciting for you. But you'd be able to definitely grow. Like, I could see you having a garden that's just full of these absolutely incredible, literally cannot buy them unless you're like messaging people on Etsy and eBay, which you can, you know, some, you're going to find like sweet potato slips, like from some weirdo on eBay. I mean, not weirdo. They're probably amazing. It's probably someone like me, but it's usually like a little sketchy. You're like, okay, I'm like black marketing these pink sweet potatoes, but it's worth it.
Hi, I'm Chef Whitney Aronoff. As a personal chef, I created custom organic spices for my clients. These blends are of the highest quality with no added sugar, MSG, caking agents, or any junk. I want you to have the same access to good quality seasonings, which is why I've launched my line of organic spice blends. High Vibration Foods by Starseed Kitchen is my collection of chef-crafted organic spice blends made with only good-for-you ingredients. I use organic source spices, ancient mineral-rich Redmond real salt, prepare the blends listening to Kundalini mantra music, then charge the jars with the quartz Giza crystals for a true high vibration experience. You can now purchase my most requested blend, 11 Magic Herbs and Spices, on starseedkitchen.com. Use code STARSEED for 10% off your purchase. Can't wait for you to enjoy.
Yeah, that's actually what I want. So like, for instance, when I went to Cuba, I got to go to this incredible farm outside Havana that gardened all the food for a restaurant. It's in the town, if anyone's planning a trip to Cuba, it's in the town where Hemingway lived. And it's the best restaurant I ate at in Cuba. And Cuba's actually not known for their food. And getting to see the garden before eating was incredible. And there they had this oregano where the oregano leaf is the size of like a child's hand. It's huge. And they use the oregano leaf like we use bay leaf. And they're very, very large oregano leaves. And I've always wanted to grow and cultivate that type of oregano. And obviously that oregano isn't originally from Cuba. It was probably from Spain or Italy or another country and brought there. But like, that's the type of oregano I've always wanted to grow in my yard. There's just so many varieties out there. And I just want to be able to find them and cultivate them, because once you do so, then you can share it with others and you can expand their palates and improve their health and, you know, this, their consciousness, and get them thinking beyond what's just available in the grocery store. There's so much more.
Absolutely. And that is part of why I think it's so important for people, especially like in their youth and in, you know, or I don't know. I think we're young, but maybe in your middle age or whenever, like before, I used to think gardening was like, oh, someday when I'm like a grandma, I'm going to get into gardening. Now is the time. I mean, it enhances your life in so many ways, but yeah, growing and cultivating these unique varieties, I feel like is really what also makes gardening super cultural and makes food really, really interesting. But what I think is cool, way back and like dating back to, I was talking about like, let's talk 17th century, botanists were scouring the world for unique plants and cultivars. And then they would take them home and they would all have like greenhouses that they were trying to grow things in and figuring out, you know, the timing of everything and when to seed everything. So I just think that's a practice that's not quite as commonly known. But people like me, we're doing that. It's just not as common practice. But that is, I feel like, more of what the world needs. And what's so interesting about traveling, I have some girlfriends who are like, every time I go to France, I buy some seeds. Every time I go to Italy, because you can come home and cultivate it, adapt it to your climate, and then work it in. I think there's nothing more interesting and exciting than that, especially when you go to someone else's garden and you're like, what is this giant marigold? I grew these giant long stem marigolds one year in honor of Dia de los Muertos, but then decided I wanted to use them because you can eat them in making these like sticky morning buns, kind of like a cardamom bun, but kind of like sticky. But the specific scent and taste of the marigold really enhanced it in a certain way. Some people don't like the smell of it, but it's like now I grow that plant for that reason, and it's become this special tradition that hopefully outlasts me, but I think that just makes life really well textured.
Yeah, and that those are family recipes. I always try to ask my dad for family recipes from his family's beach house in Northern California because they were right up there. The house was right next to Tamalpais Mountain. And so they could walk outside and forage for berries, for mushrooms. And then they would tell him what to go collect. He would collect it. And then his grandmother would cook with that. So, you know, this existed everywhere. You know, I'm a history nut as well, and I love to read about the history of the food that was prepared in California. So I've gone to the Santa Barbara Historical Society and asked for the oldest cookbooks there because I really want to know, like, what were they eating? Where was the food coming from? How were they finding it? Like, what was really here? And how were they properly preparing it? And I think it's just really helpful to learn, you know, not just from the internet or from asking a family member what they ate growing up, but to look to see what was written down about what people were really eating, even if it's just like the 1890s, you know, 120, 30 years ago.
Well, what I think is really cool, and I was going to tell this story. I have a girlfriend, so it's a secondhand story, but she was telling me she grew up in Utah and her mom would have her go outside in the mountains and like forage for their greens for a smoothie every morning. And she was like, oh my God, I'd be so annoyed. I'd have to go out and get these greens for the smoothies. And I'd be washing them in the sink. And my mom would be like, wash the greens with reverence, you know? And I'm like laughing, thinking like, that's something I would not only think, but also say to my children, like, honor the plants when you rinse them, you know? But what it also makes me think of, aside from how amazing her mom is I believe that plants grow in certain places as well for certain reasons, and then they are helping inform us of our needs and the nutrients that we need, the vibrations that we need. They're even like – so foraging I feel like is so important, like your local foraging. And to your point, figuring out what recipes people were using and what they were sourcing hyper, hyper local, and then how they would transform that into a meal worth writing down. I totally agree. I think there's just so much that goes into that beyond just what tastes good. There are so many more layers.
Well, growing up, I'd always ask my grandma who invented salads. And she would always say, people have always eaten salads. And I was never satisfied with her answer. So that was part of why I went to the Santa Barbara Historical Society and asked for their oldest cookbooks on hand, because my family originally settled in Santa Barbara in the 1700s. And I wanted to like find out the truth if people were eating salads in the 1700s in Santa Barbara. And they were, I mean, like, I think only what a healthy chef would like be pondering. I mean, I probably like not the normal questions that go on in people's heads. And sure enough, in the cookbooks, it talked about where they would forage the greens along the different streams that ran, you know, on the side streets of what's now, you know, downtown Santa Barbara and State Street. It's really fascinating. They were just simply foraging greens.
For sure. There are, even here where we are, I found this stream and I'm still not convinced. Everyone's saying that it's like a natural spring, but there's so many people here. Foraging in a waterway makes me nervous. Like, I just feel like that's just so urban here. But there's watercress and wild celery that grow. Always wanted to cook with it. Watercress is so delicious. And when you eat a salad that's been foraged, and even a homegrown salad, I was talking about this morning, like at my school drop off with someone. It really redefines what a salad is like. I mean, you haven't had a salad until you've eaten a salad with foraged greens because it's not what you'd think. Like, you'll never want to have anything with romaine in it as long as you live. You're like, forget it. This is ridiculous. That's not – it's basically like trying to make water crunchy. So it's just it, – there's just – oh, it's just the joy of life.
So what are you looking forward to in the spring? What can't you wait to harvest and eat?
Yeah. So for us, the spring garden is a little bit different because we don't grow a lot of things that people can – that other people can. So we're saying goodbye to like the brassicas and the broccolis and the cauliflowers and like those things. And what's coming in – what I'm really looking forward to, like summer squash. I've been craving that lately. So all your summer squash, we do eat a lot of cucumbers, do a lot of pickling, like a lot of relish making. So that's just easy food where it's like the kids are just out there. I could never cook a vegetable for them because they're just out garden foraging for whatever they want. And that suits me just fine. I do enjoy tomato season. I'm warming up to it more and more. Tomatoes just aren't always great in our climate, even though you think you can grow anything anywhere. But mm-hmm. I found some good varieties where it's just like having that first tomato sandwich of the season, nothing beats that. So I do love my tomatoes. Fresh corn is also a next level experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to corn. I'm trying to think. I'm just starting to plan it all out. I'm going to grow a lot of cut flowers, which are fun and also edible, like dahlias and sunflowers. There are edible components to those, which are really, really fun. I'm going to be doing a lot of beans this year. So I'm excited to really hone a lot of my dry bean recipes, mm-hmm. Which is also not that common. My husband's one of those people. He's like, can we just have like a pot of beans going all the time? I'm like, actually, yes.
Yes. Yes. Sign me up. I love home cooked beans. Love. Right?
And so like it's amazing. Grow them and let them dry on the vine. And then you just grab them, shell them, throw them in a mason jar until it's time. But I really want to hone my bean recipes. And also, and this is getting so niche, but like all those bean crocks that you cook the beans in, mm-hmm. I'm like getting a collection going. I'm obsessed with these like ceramic bean crocks. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I do. Cause I want to start to invest in a lot more clay cooking pots, all those different colors and shapes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really into. I find them really beautiful and I find them heirloom pieces. And it's exactly that. It's for either just cooking on the stove or for me ultimately to put in the oven to slow cook something. But they're just so beautiful and they're non-toxic. It's just finding them and they're investments, but it's just finding them. And that's what I want to start collecting.
Well, I was at the park randomly talking and I was like, I got to go home and roast a chicken, you know, obviously like park talk. People are looking at me like I'm crazy. But this girl was like, oh my gosh. She was like, how do you do your roast chicken? And I'm like, oh, I just use like I've got like an enamel cast iron pot that I was going to use. And she's like, my mom used to make our chickens in this clay pot with like a lid on it, like a terracotta pot. And I was like, yes. What? Never heard of that. Of course, in scouring the internet, finding these gorgeous terracotta pots that you're supposed to be roasting your chickens in. And I was like, they are a little bit of an investment, but it creates such a nostalgic experience. Now her kids are talking about her mom's amazing roast chicken. I'm like, I need her recipe. I'm buying these clay pots. Like, this is amazing. So I know I'm starting to just become one of those people too. I'm probably going to be buried in like a coffin full of wicker baskets at this point, because that's like my obsession, I'm like a basket lady to the actual in like reality. I'm just obsessed with like harvest baskets and wicker baskets. And like, anyways, it's just all so good.
No, it's okay. I have this dream trip that I want to take back to Maine so I can go to that place that makes those incredible baskets, because my mom collects those baskets. So I want to go to their headquarters and buy a bunch of baskets.
I want to go with you.
Okay, perfect. I'm really serious. I want to go back there to buy baskets. I want to go to all the little farm stands, like all the cute little coastal towns. And I have this vision for I want to do some sort of starseed kitchen or spring summer party dinner event. I have all these screenshots where I put all the food in baskets. And it's just a beautiful table full of a variety of different types of baskets, but the food is in the baskets with beautiful foliage.
Obsessed. I'll send you the,
yeah,
just please because send me inspiration just to swoon over.
Yes, because instead of just seeing these images and swooning over them, I want to create them and live them. Like it, I'm tired of putting this stuff off and expecting someone else to invite me to an event where I can finally experience that. Let me just make it happen because I'm not alone in wanting to surround myself in this food and this beauty.
Here's also why I think it matters, because I was thinking, I saw online as well, these bread baskets where it's like a beautiful woven basket with, again, like a terracotta plate that you heat up on the bottom of the basket, shaped perfectly for the basket, and that has like a woven lid. So you fresh bake your bread, you put it in your bread basket, you close it up, you put it on the table so everyone can have their fresh bread, and these terracotta plates, gorgeous, the basket's gorgeous, the whole moment is so aesthetic and so chef's kiss. However, this is what it's about and what I've encountered in my life. When I make mundane and ordinary things feel beautiful, I crave them. And so I do them more. I actually do bake our family's bread. So, and we're a family of five. We're going through 2 loaves of bread minimum a week. Maybe we eat too much bread, but lots of sandwiches and rolls and snacks. And my kids like bread toasted with cream cheese. And then we're making avocado toast, like who knows? But it becomes this really beautiful act that I crave because I've set it up to be that way. Like mm-hmm. we're making our sourdough. It's in my gorgeous little Weck jar. And then it doesn't have to be expensive. It just has to be something where it's like, I want to surround myself with the beautiful energy of this act. And the more it's beautiful to you, the more you're going to want to put yourself in the setting and proximity of doing it. Same thing with the garden. Like when the garden is beautiful, it beckons you. And I think all, even laundry, it's like, I'm so over doing laundry. I'm going to die in a pile of laundry. I'm just so sick of it. But when I choose a location in the house that I love, or I go outside on a sunny day and take my laundry out there, put on a podcast, I'm vibing. Like that is what I feel like that's what pushes us forward and helps us live up to the version of the lives that we want is when we can find a way to make everything beautiful and really like beckon us into it.
I completely agree. Like otherwise, what's the point of not just making it that way now and continuing to put it off? If we live in it now, then it's like another analogy that I've been really simmering on recently as I feel like I'm going through a transition in my chef career is, you know, as a chef, you're often expected to dress a certain way, but dressing that way makes me feel small and kind of makes me feel down because I don't feel pretty and confident in that type of uniform. It's just not the right type of uniform for me. So I get to elevate what that uniform is for me. So I feel confident and pretty and still feminine. And so why wait till after work to change my clothes and feel that way? Find a way to feel it in every moment and change the ambiance or the uniform as it suits you.
I love that. I couldn't agree more. I'm someone that gets dressed every morning. I'm not into the like wear Lulus all day. And because I feel like it just brings on a different energy and a different adventure for your life when you're, I don't know, when you're embodying where you want to be and what you expect the world to reflect to you. But I think in our actions, it's the same too. Yeah, absolutely. Why wait? And it's just, I think you'll find yourself more often feeling like in awe of your own life when you make it to be that way.
Yes. When you romanticize it. I mean, like, why not? Because no one's going to do it for you. So just romanticize it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think too, I mean, sometimes that feels cringe or awkward or like I often feel like different, which doesn't bother me, but it's, you know, sometimes you're like, am I turning into that crazy lady? Like not mad about it, but do I need to have some more self-awareness around this? Because I'm like showing up at dinner parties with like carrying a basket like I'm Jane Birkin instead of a Gucci bag because
it's okay. I'm now carrying around my LL Bean little boat tote with starseed embroidered on it more so than a purse. All my designer purses are in a drawer. Like I'd love to use them for a date night, But what lights me up is using my little boat tote. While it's all clean and crisp and small, and that's what works for me right now. And, you know, I can go back to the other stuff another time.
Also, Vera, I'm really going through like a vintage L.L. Bean catalog moment for my life. Like, I want to just lean into that. But it's going to be perfect for our trip to Maine.
Yes, it will be. Perfect. I get to pull out all the clothes from my East Coast life. Yes.
There, one thing I have to say about Maine, because you'll know about this, and this is something that we need to do. I was watching this woman like forage for these little snails that are like in the craggy rocks in Maine. There's a certain name for them. I can't remember. And then she'd obviously go home and like cook them like escargot style. Because someone was asking me this. You can't just eat a garden snail. That's not going to be escargot. Like you have to actually, you know, there's a difference in the variety of snails. But they were – it's something that coastal Maine has, like these little tiny snail things you can forage off the rocks. And I was like, that needs to be a part of my Maine experience with our basket event that's happening. I'm really excited.
I'm down for that because I also want to eat the seaweed there. And so whether it's finding the type of seaweed that you cook with or simply or getting some of that seaweed and drying it and bringing it home and using it as a version of kombu in your bone broths, you know, to add that natural iodine. I don't know, but I feel like there's some local seaweed that I can harvest. I mean, I buy the Maine seaweed, you know, the sprinkle seaweed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's from Maine. So there has to be some seaweed around there to pick up.
Yeah. I'm also thinking we could make our own sea salt. I was looking into this as well. I mean, the Pacific Ocean, especially where we are, there's too much junk. So how absolutely devastating is that? And then you're talking about seaweed with iodine. Everyone's thyroids are messed up. It's like if we could just do better as humans, we would probably feel better.
Yeah. As a kid, I would try to harvest the flaked sea salt down at Three Arch Bay Beach. And my dad told me I couldn't eat it. He was like, you know, look at all the boats driving by. He's like, everything that's coming out of those boats are going into that salt. So you can't eat that salt. You have to find a place where there aren't all this activity in order for you to harvest it. And I just remember devastated. I just wanted to eat the salt off the rocks.
I know, but also it takes you down a scary rabbit hole of like, this is what our animals and plant life are existing within. And I mean, I'm getting really weird about water. I have these little RV water filters that I attach to all my raised beds now so we can filter out some of the city water, the toxins and the chlorine and all of that. So a little pro tip for anyone listening who does like to garden, get those little – they make these little water filters that are for like an RV, and you just put them in between your hose bib and your irrigation, and they like filter everything.
That's fantastic. I was told by a chef in my culinary school to lean towards buying wines from Germany because they filter all the water that they spray on all of their grape leaves. So the wine itself is a better quality because the water that fed the grapes is cleaner.
It's just – these are the things you don't think about. And absolutely, it all makes a difference for sure. You can taste the difference in water. I mean, you can smell our water here in Southern California. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, I know. It's very – these are the things you kind of forget to think about when you're not a pro.
Well, where can people tune into your podcast and connect with you if they want to keep diving down, creating a kitchen garden, or just enjoy these type of conversations and topics with you?
Thank you. Yes. The podcast is called The Garden Culture Podcast. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, that's where it is. But you can get information for that and anything else on my website, which is baileyvantassel.com. Bailey Van Tassel is where I am on Instagram as well. And yeah, that's the spot.
Perfect. Well, I'll have all those links in the show notes. And it's been such a treat to connect with you today. I learned so much. Could you leave our guests with just one last tip they can consider adding into their life to support their kind of health and well-being?
Yeah, fill your head with happy thoughts. So filter anything out that isn't serving you. Like, censor yourself. Turn off the news. Listen to good music. Stop following people that make you feel sad. Stop eating food that makes you feel sad. Pay attention to that. Like, within 90 minutes of eating, how do you feel? It's not the immediate, you know, it's what you're going to feel like an hour afterwards. So just start paying attention and edit, or as I like to think of, like, pull the weeds, you know, pull the weeds of your mind, like, pull out the bad thoughts and let them go, make space for something else.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. Such a treat to connect with you here.
Yes, same. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the High Vibration Living Podcast. Please leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you are tuning in from to help more listeners like and find this podcast. And if you really loved what you heard today, pay it forward and send this episode to a friend or loved one. For more Starseed Kitchen, visit starseedkitchen.com and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Be sure to pick up a jar of my High Vibration Foods organic spices, which you can purchase on starseedkitchen.com. You can find me and follow along on my chef adventures on all your favorite social media channels at Whitney Aronoff. Thanks again for tuning in. Cheers to you and your health.